It's a great. They're wonderful. They are kind of a bell against the kind of a sound against the prevailing culture and the assumptions of what's normal. And they still speak truth. They talk about Jesus and his coming, and they also define and tell us what matters to God, what's on his heart, and what is his unfolding plan for his people. And we find that centered around Jesus. But from chapter 4, verse 1, and then a famous verse from chapter 6, verse 8, it talks about in the last days of which we are part now. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and people will stream to it. Many nations will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of God, the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between many peoples and settle disputes for strong nations far and wide. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Everyone will sit under their own vine and under their own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid, for the Lord Almighty has spoken. All the nations may walk in the name of their gods, but we will walk in the name of the Lord, our God, forever and ever. And chapter 6, verse 8. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. We pray for our nations and we pray the Lord's will for them. And actually, that's the Lord's will for nations. I know it's complicated and there's no simple solutions, but his purposes in good governance are not warmongering and lining the pockets of the wealthy, but to seek peace and equity for all, to love mercy and humility. So it's great to welcome Chris. Come on, Chris, to the seat here. Welcome. It's great to have you amongst us. I know Grandpa Phil over here last night was saying, oh, I knew you from when you were so small, which is true. How old are you, Chris?
I'm 35 now.
It's on? Should be on. Alan will...
I think, yeah.
Yeah. 25?
It wasn't on, right, from when I answered. You didn't hear my age. Oh, no, it's fine.
Welcome. Tell us just a little bit about you and kind of maybe your background. I asked you yesterday if you remembered the communist era, and you said you were one when it collapsed. Yeah. So just give us a little thumbnail from that sort of early 90s to now.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's good to be. And I'm bringing you greetings from your brothers and sisters in Romania. I think this is amazing that in Christ's body there are no borders. So this is nice. So I was 1 year old. It was actually around my birthday when the communism fell, when the revolution took place. And it was some years of chaos in Romania, which apparently haven't ended yet. It was interesting. It was interesting times, and I was thinking about inspiring stories, as you said. And I was thinking that I don't think my story in particular is inspiring, but I can talk a lot about the one who inspires my story every day and who writes my story, after all. So I grew up in this quite traditional Romanian family. It was me and my sister and my parents, and there's been a lot of persecution of the Christians during the communist time. And my dad was involved in delivering Bibles and all these kind of secret missions. And it was so I grew up with these amazing stories of him running from the security, and because that's just how we called them in
just
those times.
His name may crop up. What's the name of your mum and dad, just so we're...
My mum and dad were Ikai and Liviu. And I think God placed around me very inspiring people, starting from my grandparents. And my grandfather actually did prison time during the communist time because of his faith. Actually, because he didn't want to tell a lie, he was the cashier of the church in a small village, and the communists were trying to arrest almost every pastor. So he was supposed to lie that the pastor stole the money of the church, and he said, "No, I'm not going to say that. It's a lie." So they've put him in prison, and I sometimes think if today we would be able to suffer for, you know, just a tiny lie. It's not much, but then to stand for the truth and to do prison time for the truth. And it was interesting. He has spent 7 years in the war, and then he came back. And my mom was from a family of 6 children, and he was having a brain tumor at the time when they arrested him and put him in prison. And they kept pressuring him this whole time. For a year and a half he was there. And the communist prisons were, I'm telling you, they were not nice. Mm-hmm. He couldn't be visited by the family, by anybody. And they kept telling him, just say this, just tell this lie. Do you want your children to starve? Do you want your children to die? Because it was difficult times. And he said, "No, God will provide for my family. God will take care." And then my grandmother has her side of the story, where they were having no food left in the house, and she would just sit on her knees and pray. And she said there was a knock on the door, and someone would come with some bread and some. So, you know, amazing, amazing stories how God provides when you trust in Him. And then he got out of the prison a year and a half later, and his brain tumor was gone. So, it was. And then, I mean, it's a legacy that has been following me, I think, all these years. And as I grew up, seeing a lot of suffering and a lot of injustice, and at the same time seeing my parents trying to fight against it. My father, when he started getting involved right after the revolution to help deliver the aid, because it was great chaos and a lot of help was coming from the West, and people were just, it was not distributed wisely, it was not used wisely, so he said, "Well, we have to do something about this." And he actually thought it would be a couple of months. And then 35 years later, Ecce Homo is still running. Because he was an engineer at the time. he had no... And I think my story, in a way, is similar, because although I grew up, in a way, with Ecce Homo, used to laugh to say, but I'm the oldest member of Ecce Homo, because since I was 1 year old, I was part of this ministry. But we were there playing around in the warehouse and growing up like this. But it was not something that I thought I would do. It was not something that I wanted to do. I studied music. I went on to the university and graduated. And I had a band. I was playing at different events and weddings. And then, in a way, I think God has had his plan. And he also had a lot of patience with me through my rebel times. And I think God gave me a verse this morning. It was actually verse of the day and the Bible app from Ephesians chapter 2. And it says that we are God's handiwork. And he has created us in Jesus Christ to do good works, which he has prepared in advance for us to do. Mm. And I was thinking, well, isn't this amazing to be created to do good works? Mm. And not only this, but to know that they have been prepared in advance. It, in the end, it's just a choice that you have to make. Do I want to do it? Do I just want to be a bystander? Mm-hmm. Or will I be a doer? And I think I've been asking myself a lot, what do I want to, I mean, to do with this, not just to say big words, not just to, but to live it, you know, to really be, to really be in it. And I think during these past years, especially since my dad has retired, 5, 6, 7 years, and it's been hard also for us in Ecce Homo, because he was the engine mm-hmm. of everything. He knew everything. He did almost everything. And then you sit and wonder. We had to have a time of just questioning ourselves, and like I said this morning, God has his way of keeping us in on the ropes sometimes, mm-hmm. and it's hard to live like this, to be always on the edge, to not know what will happen, you just have to give control to him. Because otherwise you couldn't do it. You just have to say. And then we said, okay, God, this is your work, not ours. Mm-hmm. These are your projects. If you've kept it going for 35 years, then it means that you want it. And if you want to end it, then you will, and we'll mm-hmm. be happy. It's our dream to lose our jobs in a way, because then we can say that there's no more need for Ecce Homo in Romania, and it's great, but so far, it's not the case.
Thank you for that. You've prepared a little video that we saw, a short version this morning. We're going to see a longer version. But before we see that, just give us, I know things have changed over the years from the kind of the desperate plight at the fall of communism and of many orphans in really awful conditions. But give us a little snapshot, both now and some of the ways that Ecce Homo has responded to seeing what the need is and sought to make a difference and bring kind of the love of Jesus into some very desperate places. So can you give us a summary of the different range of ways that you serve?
Yes, I think the whole history of Ecce Homo could be resumed to this. God just bringing a need before us and we responding. I remember my dad saying, oh, we have to do this, and we didn't have resources for it, but he said, well, if God is showing us this need, it means we have to respond, and it means he will bring the resources to it. And it's been like this for all these years. And of course, this society is changing, and we have to adapt, and the needs are changing in a way, or at least some of the needs, because this is interesting. When I think about Romania 30 years ago and Romania now, there are still aspects in which I can say it hasn't changed. There's still that poverty where people suffer of hunger, and sure, it's painful to say this, that because it's 2024 and we're in the EU, but to still have people who suffer from hunger and who still don't have heat during the winter, and children who are, in their bare feet, and it's winter, and all these things. So in a way, we still have these very, very basic, very primal needs. But then also some of them have gotten more complex, I could say. So our current projects are, we have a project for poor families. This is one of our oldest, and this is where we see these needs that I was talking about. And then we have two projects for elderly people, because this is something that has been becoming, it's an accelerated need that we're seeing around us. One of these projects is, we help the poor people who have very low incomes, and they are in very difficult situations. And another one is we assist them in our home, in their homes, like a home care assistance. And we also have a project for patients suffering with cancer. in Cluj, in the city where I am from.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are our current projects, but we've had many, many other projects over the years. Distributions.
We heard this morning about AMIC with children, that 54 children over the years. You have summer camps gathering children.
Summer camps, yeah, we still run those for the children coming from poor families. For most of them, it's the first holiday they've ever had, and it's great. AMIC still runs the family home. We've had the social center for poor children. There we've accommodated over 200 children. We just closed that project in 2020, I think. It was no longer needed, but that was also a big project, and we've had many, many children.
And more latterly, you responded to the Ukraine situation, refugees that you...
Yes, yeah. Yes, we still deliver goods. Even this year, we had the transport. We don't go as often now because, it's gotten a little bit more difficult to get resources for this. I think it's like in any crisis situations, the first response is it's big, and then it grows, it decreases with time. But we still try to go regularly. We've created a bond with a church there who they are closer to the Romanian border, and we take the goods there, and from there they distribute it to all the areas affected by war and where the armies and everywhere. Mm-hmm. They are doing a great job. They have their centers there and accommodate refugees and families who don't really want to leave the country, but they can stay there, and being close to the Romanian border, they are safe.
Well, let's see some more, and towards the end of the video, there's some testimonies from some of the children who've been part of AMIC, the children's home that we heard this morning. Chris went out and helped build 31 years ago, but it's been
Did a great job. A still standing.
Care and love. Thank you, Alan.
After the communism fall in 1990, Romania unveiled another face to the world. The secrets, well kept by Ceausescu, came to light, and the situation of the orphanages shocked not just the Western world, but also us. Hundreds, thousands of children being kept in inhumane conditions, a battle for survival. The aid started to come, but it wasn't enough. A change was due from the inside to really make a difference in the lives and future of these children for good. An idea dawned. Building family-like homes with 10, 12 children, with social parents taking care of them, an environment as close to a family as possible. God gave life to this idea and brought people from other parts of the world, putting in their hearts a desire to support and serve in this work for the benefit of the Romanian children. This is how God's Mountain came to life, now AMIC, which started accommodating children in 1994. Children that were given a chance to a new life, from terrible orphanage conditions and neglect to knowing the love of a family. Fast forward to 2024. 30 years and 54 children later, AMIC continues to provide a safe place and accommodation for 8 children at present. We started last year with 11 children. Maria, age 17, and Damian, age 13, were integrated in their families. Maria went to live with her father and older brother, while Damian's mother returned in his life, and after proving to be serious and responsible, she assumed the responsibility of taking him home. Christian, age 21, our veteran who lived in AMIC since he was 4 years old, moved on his own in a rented apartment at the end of the year. He was the first one in his family to take the baccalaureate exam and attend a university. He has a job and is planning to get married this year. The children who come here each have their own path in life and their own life story, each with their struggles and traumas, but each being given a chance to a new life. They are being assisted on all plans, educational, medical, social and professional, emotional and spiritual. There are the success stories that give us hope and joy, that make us keep going when things get rough, looking back to these children who managed to make it in life, to become responsible adults who give back to society. Razvan, one of the first residents of Amik home, has his family, his home and a good job. Same Mirela, Mihai, Marian, Adrian and many others. But our biggest joy, the biggest reason to be thankful for, is the fact that each of the above mentioned and many more have chosen to follow Christ, to live a life in accordance with His will. There's no bigger satisfaction, nothing more that gives us strength but this, to know that we are co-workers in God's service, working for an eternal gain. Sure, not all stories are as successful as these. Not all the children who live go on to have a life we would call desirable. But we try to remember that neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. It's not easy though, and as proof stands the often change of personnel due to the emotional and physical fatigue, exhaustion, or simply not seeing any results for a long period of time. Just last year, we had to renew the team with 4 new employees. The children had their own challenges, their joyous moments, but also frustrating times. But better let them tell us more.
Mie anul trecut mi-a plăcut că am fost la mare, am fost în mai multe excursii la Valea Drăganului și că am fost la Nimfea.
Mie mi-a plăcut atunci când am fost cu Salo și cu tine și cu ăștia la copii când s-au dus la ăsta cu piscina aia mea și topoganele.
Păi am avut ocazia să plecăm în altă țară, să văd pentru prima dată marea. Mi-a plăcut că am avut multe activități.
Când ne-am dus la mare, în Bulgaria, mai mi-a plăcut că au fost vacanțe și că ne-am putut duce la școală.
Când am fost la mare și mă jucam cu părinții în apă. Și alți voluntari care au revenit la noi și ne-am putut distra cu ei.
Anul trecut mi-a plăcut cel mai mult că ne-am dus la mare și ne-am distrat. Plimbarea cu barca pe care a făcut-o cu Chris pe mare. Mi-a plăcut când am fost la Nifea și ne-am dat pe topoganele alea mari și m-am dat pe unul galben care era foarte abrupt.
Că am făcut multe tabere și că am avut multe activități. Am fost la mare, că am văzut animale subacvatice.
Mie cel mai mult anul trecut mi-a plăcut că am fost la mare, am fost în multe tabere, am fost la călărit, am fost la o fermă mică de animăluțe. Și cel mai tare mi-a plăcut atunci când am fost la călărie și m-am urcat pe un cal pe nume Beyoncé.
Păi, am fost în apă, mie nu-mi plăcea să mă duc în apă.
Am intrat la liceu și că am putut... Să pot face o școală mai bună.
Că acum e mai liniște și că ne înțelegem mai bine toți între noi.
Dacă în sfârșit am putut merge la mare, că n-am fost niciodată. Și am cățărat.
Că am încheiat anul cu bine. Și că mă gândesc că pot să ajung departe.
Pe mine m-a bucurat foarte tare că am ajuns într-o relație bună cu ceilalți copii. Am ajuns și să-mi schimb și comportamentul. Am fost un copil mai dezordonat, mai răutăcios.
Că m-a schimbat mai mult. Că îți mai cuminte de anul trecut față de anul trecut.
Că am încheiat școala cu bine.
Investing in a child is a long-term investment. It's one for life. Perhaps one of the most valuable we can make. But a costly one. One that requires commitment, patience and many resources. Therefore, the need for support in prayer, for financial and moral support, is great. What do we want for 2024? To welcome new children who need and could benefit from what Amik has to offer. Also, to purchase a container office that would be placed in the yard so we can use the current office space as another dormitory for children. But the little ones also have their own plans.
So... Am o medie mare și să închei cu bine.
Să trec anul școlar, să nu rămân cu origine la nicio materie.
sau mă duc încă o dată în altă țară și mai învăț lucruri noi.
Pe mi-aș dori să termin anul ăsta cu bine, să-mi iau examenul și după să continui la Seral încă 3 ani, să am 12 clase plus diploma.
Să iau note mai bune și să avansez la învățat. Vreau să continui și cu fotbal și la fotbal vreau să avansez.
Ca să fie pace în casă.
There's not much difference really in kids, is there? To have fun and get through exams.
Yes. These are the children that we currently have in AMIC, yeah.
Yeah, it's really encouraging to see, so we're blessed by that and encouraged. We mentioned Ika's house. It was the social center and it's changed. So why is it called Ika's house, first and foremost?
So it, when we realized that, because the social center during its last years was working something similar like AMIC, because of course the problem with the poor children in Romania was no longer an issue, thankfully. So we were accommodating children like we're doing in AMIC. Then the children we had. So the social center was big. We had 19 places there. And the laws in Romania changed, so you cannot accommodate more than 12 children. So the space was too big to keep the children. It was not. It was too expensive to keep it running. And so we said, okay, we kept the children until they grew up and they moved away. Some of them were transferred to AMIC. And then we said, okay, we prayed and see what can we do with this facility that we have. And this is how the idea of ICA Home came to life. Because I was saying in Cluj we have one of the, some consider to be the most important oncology center in Romania.
That's treatment of cancer.
Treatment of cancer, yeah. And they are sending patients to Cluj from all over Romania. And on my way home many times, because I passed by the oncology hospital and I was seeing people sleeping in their cars. And it was...
Why were they sleeping in the car?
Because they could not afford the hotel. And many of them come for treatment. They are not being hospitalized because there are too many. So they cannot sleep in the hospital. There are too many patients and not enough room. And so they have to find an accommodation, and some of them need treatment for 1 month, 2 months, and then you cannot afford a hotel for 1 month or 2 months. And Cluj is a very expensive city, and so then we said, okay, this is a need, this is a big need in Cluj.
So I'm going to stop you there because you said something different last night. You said something that the Lord's kind of opened your eyes. Do you want to just explain that? Of you were going home, passing these people, and you noticed, but there was something more in that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, look at those people sleeping in a car. There was. Tell us about that.
Because my mom had cancer, and I used to go with her to the treatments, and we realized how blessed we were to be living, to be a walking distance from the hospital. And we've had, she was having, in the room where she did the treatment, there were 12 other people. And most of them were from other towns, from other parts of Romania. And they were going after the treatment on to take the train and then like 12-hour train ride to get home and being sick after the treatment. And so... we realized this when my mom was doing the treatment that this was a blessing. But then, years went by. My mom she passed away, and now it was this situation. The Cluj has gotten more and more patients, and like I said, I was seeing them sleeping in the car, and it was heartbreaking. I think something just. something just clicked for us that it's something that we have to do, we have to respond. And then it was this facility that we had available now. So it was, I think, and then it just came natural, everything that happened. And God has blessed the place. It was amazing. I mean, we have no idea how we cover all the expenses from a month to another. We have no constant support in this from anyone. God just blesses it, you know.
So it's a place that, just explain who comes to Ika's house and.
So these people who come for treatment and their families or whoever comes with them, they can come and stay at Ika's house and they just sleep here, they eat here, and then they go to do their treatment and come back in the evening and they can stay. Usually they go home in the weekends and then return on Monday. And we've had people staying. We have a lady actually who's staying now for over 3 months. Her husband was very ill. They both came, and now he recently passed away, and she's still here at Ika's home. So, because it was such a desperate situation, she had nowhere to go. And we said, okay, but what do we do? We can't kick her out. We'll just let her stay, and we'll see. We don't know what will happen, but. So it's people who are sick who come to these hospitals for treatment, and here they find a place to stay. And of course, for us, it's a good opportunity to share the gospel. And some of them are skeptical, but in the end, it's amazing how God just works in this place, and it's probably suffering makes people a bit more open to hearing more. But we also try to meet other needs they have, like the need for food. We're trying to find local restaurants that are willing to bring a soup, a hot soup, after treatment. It's very welcomed for them. Sometimes we have a kitchen there and it's fully equipped and they can cook, but not all of them are able to do it. And also paying for the taxi transport to get from the hospital back. Sometimes they are very, very weak, feeling very nauseous, and it's difficult. So it's kind of trying to meet these needs that they have.
It's so kind and generous when people are in kind of really difficult place, either the children or the cancer sufferers and their families.
Yeah, it was, I know it's, for me, it's even more so very close to my soul, this project, because it has mom's, in a way, mom's legacy. And when we opened the house, I was praying that I wanted to be a place where people find God. And I was thinking about these like characteristics that mom had. She had the love for God, she loved God very much. And then she loved people very much. And she was making friends easily. And I said, I would like this place to be a place where people get to love God, to love each other, and to find like a family, like friends. And it's so amazing now, after 3 years, this year will be the third year since we've opened Ika's house, and to see all these three things happening in the house, it's amazing. Yeah.
Wonderful. What keeps you going?
Well, hard question. I know. I think it's just the fact that we've said, God, here we are, use us. So now, once we said this, we can't. No, but there are so many stories, so many needs, and once you step into this work, it's very hard to give up. It's very hard to what do you do? You just close your eyes and you say you don't want to see it anymore. You can't do this. And I think it's just, you know, what God called us to do. This morning, I really loved Philip's message, and I was thinking that the paralyzed man was so blessed to have such friends. Mm-hmm. And I think I was making this analogy. We are those friends for these people. And are we, or how far are we willing to go to get these people before Jesus? Mm-hmm. Are we willing to take off the roof to do whatever it takes? Because sometimes, even with these families, you know, we battle mentalities, and it's very hard. And it's sometimes it's easier to say, well, you know what, I'll just leave them alone in their misery. They don't want to change. What can we do? And then I was thinking this morning, you know, it's. I don't think we have a choice as Christians, honestly. It is what we have to do. It is what Jesus did. It is what he called us to do. And we have to be those friends who do everything in their power to bring these children, these families, these people in suffering to Christ. And because people don't know they need Christ. They think they need salvation from poverty or from physical pain. God can also do that. It's not, no question. But they need exactly what Jesus said to the man: "Your sins are forgiven." You know, I don't know. Just to sum it up, I don't think we have an option, honestly. So.
You said at the start that you were like, "Oh, I've not got really anything inspiring to say." I disagree. And we're celebrating you and the team's faithfulness and your dad and your mum in many years. And please bring our joy and thanksgiving and appreciation and encouragement as brothers and sisters to the team that you've shared and represented.
Thank you. It means a lot to know that you're praying and that we're not alone in this. You know, sometimes I see how hard it is for people. They feel burdened. They feel seeing so many needs, sometimes not being able to respond to these needs as we would like. It's difficult sometimes. It's burdening. But knowing that we are not alone in this and we have people praying and having our back, and it's really, really, really thank you from all my heart for this, because it matters a lot.
Yeah, and we're really glad you could come and share. What I was just thinking, if you're happy to, we'd love to pray for you. But before we do that, one of the things I heard you say last night and this morning and kind of made reference to is actually to listen and see what the Lord is doing. And you've been doing that in Cluj. But I just thought it'd be just good for us to spend a few moments just listening to the Lord and for some words of encouragement for you, words that would build you up. Maybe they're things you already know, but the Lord wants to repeat. You've already said that. I started the service with Ephesians 2 about plans and purposes prepared in advance, prayed that. So let's just kind of just wait. It may be that you want to share that publicly now for Chris or for the projects. But it may be that you think, oh, I'm not sure, and you just want to share that later individually. That's okay too. So we'll just spend a few moments and just ask. The only things I would ask in this is that they're encouraging and they're seeking to build up and they're going to be life-giving, because that's what the Lord does. So let's spend a few moments.
You can take advice as well.
We want just to, maybe something for Chris particularly, or for the project, we'll just wait. It may be a scripture or something that resonated in what you have heard. And then after a little bit of time, we're going to spend some time praying for you and Jehovah.